If you invest in product up front and you can't figure out how to sell it, there's a many tombstones of great, mm-hmm. beautiful pieces of software that have been built that just couldn't get sold.
You're listening to the SaaS Academy, an educational podcast dedicated to the art and science of SaaS development. Get ready to hear the most important lessons inspired by both the victories and the hard knocks that have shaped today's SaaS businesses. Here's your host, Mallory Merrill.
Welcome to SaaS Academy. It's Mallory Merrill here with Toby Scammell, founder of Womply. To put it simply, Womply software is a gift to small businesses everywhere, serving more than 150,000 growing businesses around the country. The scope of services offered by Womply includes some of the most critical pieces for healthy, reliable business growth like reputation management, marketing automation, business intelligence, CRM, and payment processing. In short, Womply's mission is to help tip the scales for small businesses. How is that possible? It's all about the data. Thanks to partnerships with the nation's largest credit card processors, Womply provides unmatched data access. They analyze electronic payments from millions of transactions each day, gaining rare insights about hundreds of millions of cardholders. That data is then analyzed alongside a massive other data points from contact info to weather reports and integrated with Womply software. Now, here's a bit of history. Toby was born and raised in Australia, where he had a pet wombat named Womply. Yes, that's where the name comes from. And just in case you can't conjure a clear image of a wombat, it is the cutest animal in the world. Toby himself is fastidious and unafraid to go against the grain. He's intensely smart, and I'm so excited to have him on the show today. Toby, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, Mallory. Great to be with you.
This is going to be good. Okay. Today, we're going to talk about some not so traditional approaches to SaaS and about the benefits of having a distribution first product strategy. But first, Toby, tell us a little bit more about you and Womply.
Thanks. Yeah, it's great to be here. So Womply is a small business software company. We've got a few hundred employees across the US. We've got offices in San Francisco and Utah. And we're fortunate to wake up every day and get to serve the small businesses of America. We've got over 150,000 paying small business customers that use our software each day to manage their businesses. And so we are helping them with business intelligence, reputation management, CRM solutions, and marketing automation. And really the goal of Womply is to help these small businesses take full advantage of data and technology so that they can focus on doing the things that they love to do every single day in their business and that only they can do. And we can handle all of the messy data and technology challenges that they face.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And part of what has given you guys the amazing reach that you have is a distribution first product strategy. So tell us what that is. Why is it important? And how is it different from the way SaaS companies typically approach product?
Yeah, I think it's actually really different for Womply. And if you look at a lot of Silicon Valley based companies, there's this mantra of just make things that people want, which essentially means focus all of your attention on building beautiful products that once you have a customer, they are really going to enjoy that product. And I think when you're working with the small business community and trying to get small business customers, there's actually a totally different problem, which is a little bit upstream of the problem of whether people like your software or not. Mm-hmm. And that's, can you reach those customers? Can you actually get people to even try your software? So in many ways, you know, if you're spending a ton of time just designing software, often in a startup environment, that comes at the expense of figuring out how to sell your software and how to get it in the hands of business owners.
Right.
And so I think our approach has been very different in that we've recognized early on that we need to figure out how to build software in such a way that it's super saleable and that we actually have many paths to getting customers on board. And if you think about why we do this, we can talk about how in a second, but the why I think is pretty obvious when you look around the landscape of software in the United States or products in the United States. There are lots of really poor products that are sold every single day in the US, mm-hmm. and they have substantial market share, and they're not pretty, and they're not necessarily the best solutions. Even if you ask a customer, those people may not like those products very much, but they are extremely saleable, and they've got lots of revenue generated from them. And as a result, those companies are able to continue to invest in product over time. And so you see that if you really nail distribution over time, you buy the opportunity to continue to invest further in product. And the inverse is really not true. So if you invest in product up front and you can't figure out how to sell it, there's many tombstones of great, beautiful pieces of software that have been built that just couldn't get sold. And so I think we've communicated that internally to our teams by saying, you know, we've got a distribution-centric product strategy. And given the choice between building another feature that would serve our current customers and add even more value to them, or building a feature that would allow us to expand our market and get more customers, frequently we make those trade-offs. And very often these days, we're making the trade-off in favor of maximizing distribution.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so distribution first gets your product into people's hands, and then it helps you get more information for future product development. And that helps you guys ensure you're delivering only what's wanted. And maybe it actually aligns product development with sales. Is that right?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. So obviously in Silicon Valley, you've got sort of these competing cultures. You've got folks that on one hand are developers, designers, product people. Mm-hmm. And I think very often, just the way companies are set up, those people are separate from the sales or marketing teams. And I think the best companies do a really good job of integrating them. But just if you think about the life cycle of how startups get created, very often they're created by the product visionary or the engineer who can actually build the product. It's only later after they've got a product or they've got funding that they start thinking about how to sell it. And in many cases, that turns out to be too late because the product has been built in such a way that it's just hard to sell. And the priority has been building beautiful features that might demo very well for, let's say, investors or the handful of customers that are really easy to get, as opposed to figuring out how do you architect a solution from day one that is going to be really saleable so that you can acquire tons of customers and then earn the right to continue to improve your software over time to add more and more value.
Okay, so that sounds like a pretty considerable disconnect between product and distribution. Tell us a little bit more about what causes that and maybe how that can misguide product development trends.
So I think there is a sense of product worship in Silicon Valley where designers and developers and product people tend to fall in love with their own software. And they may spend years in some cases building feature after feature after feature. And in some ways, if you think about like the long-term evolution of software development, that makes sense because a lot of software was initially built for large enterprise clients where product and engineering teams were essentially adding features upon request to keep those customers happy. In many ways, it's sort of once you start getting customers on your platform, you continue to build more and more features for those customers. But I think the challenge with that strategy, as I said, is that you end up in many cases, you sort of build yourself into a corner. You've got a ton of features, may not apply to a very large market. And in many ways, as you add new features, you might even be shrinking the market opportunity for your product offerings. And so that can work really well in enterprise software, but it doesn't work well for small businesses where the needs are really varied. And you're trying to build, at least in Wamply's case, we're trying to build for 80% of the small businesses in America. And so it takes a really you need to have a very disciplined approach when determining where you're going to invest so that you can only invest in features that are going to allow you to either distribute to a very broad spectrum of businesses or in cases where you can add a feature that's going to hopefully both allow you to distribute better and also maximize value for any of the customers that come on and start using your software.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So I think you talked about two primary pressures there. So I'm going to try to reiterate that to make sure I understand. So because of market pressures, maybe some SaaS product models produce software based on early adoption or niche adopters rather than mass product adoption. So they're appealing to the few instead of the many and then kind of chasing their tails after that point. And then maybe product pressures, companies are overspending on product development that isn't actually useful. It's like they're building a trophy software and it's awesome and lovely, but not 100% useful. But with a distribution first product strategy, it would refocus development back onto software utility. To me, that sounds like a really good thing.
Yeah. I think it's certainly a good thing for our business because ultimately you want software companies to stay in business and you need to have a viable business model, which then allows you to continue to invest over time to add more and more value into your software. And I think that's really how we've approached it at Wamply. But it's a good thing for us. And it's also a good thing if you think about how do you maximize value for your target market? Well, part of that is how many people in that target market are you able to deliver the value of your software mm-hmm. to? And obviously, if you're able to get more people to buy your software because you can make it extremely saleable, then you're actually adding more and more value to the target audience.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you are not afraid to question the status quo. And I know you've challenged some closely held beliefs in SaaS product philosophy. So give us some examples of that. In your opinion, what are some product philosophies that need to change?
Yes, I think the first one is we would argue that distribution is more important than product. And mm-hmm. at the end of the day, if you want to build a great software company, you need to refocus your company's attention on just absolutely nailing distribution. And obviously, you want to have a good product and you want to continue to invest in that, but distribution needs to come first. I think the second thing that is probably more controversial is we think that engagement is overrated in software. And so when you look at the ways in which many investors and many product folks evaluate the value that they're adding to their software, they are frequently looking at metrics like usage and time on site and number of actions that were manually taken by a user to determine whether that software is actually valuable or not. And in many cases, those objectives of measuring engagement force you down the wrong path as a product manager, and they end up resulting in you just creating work or noise mm-hmm. for your customer base. And so in many cases, we see that engagement is just totally disconnected from the value that's delivered to the customer. That's particularly true with small business owners who are super short on time. And if you have the opportunity to automate something for them in software, product managers really should take that chance and try to do for the small business owner in software what some others might ask them to do manually. And as a result, you'd be adding substantial value to their lives, but you'd actually be reducing engagement in your product. So I think as a product leader, it's super important to figure out what are the KPIs you set up for product managers. Mm-hmm. And if you're just picking engagement-based KPIs, that's probably not going to be directly correlated with value for a lot of different markets.
Okay, so the value and viability of a product relies almost totally on distribution. And engagement is important, but overrated. So if engagement is an insufficient metric, what do you think is the most important metric for businesses to look at going forward?
Yes, so if you think about where we or why do people look at engagement today as a key metric? You know, in the consumer business model, very often engagement is critical because it's directly related to your business model if advertising is your primary way of making money. And so you're monetizing eyeballs, and therefore it's totally appropriate in an ad-driven business to say, well, how many eyeballs do I have? How many impressions am I getting? Because that's going to be directly correlated with revenue. But in a SaaS software business, you know, you're charging for software on a monthly fee on a recurring basis. Really, your job there is to get to the next level, which is not to ask somebody to create a ton of impressions, but instead to maximize value. And so at least in Wamply's world, we measure how many actions can we take on behalf of a small business owner and how much work can we get off their plate that they would otherwise have to do were it not for Wamply. And so you know, we're able to, for example, we can automatically reply to small business owners' reviews when they receive those on sites like Yelp and TripAdvisor, which is a really good example of if you were taking an engagement-centric approach and you were trying to maximize for engagement, you would then shift the cost to the customer and say, hey, you got a new review, please come in and reply to it. And you know, as a product manager, you'd be hoping to increase your open rate, your click-through rate, your time on site, and then be able to say, hey, we got this small business owner to take an action. But ultimately, that's you know, that's a cost for the small business owner. And so in Wamply's philosophy, what we do instead is say, hey, can we automate that? Can we figure out how to build an engine that will automatically reply to customers' reviews online so that the small business doesn't have to? And you can imagine that that's either fully automatic or it might be sort of a draft solution that presents a small business owner with a first draft of their reply and lets them just approve it before it gets posted. But in either case, you're substantially reducing engagement but increasing value. So I think it really does depend on the product and the feature, but the ultimate goal there is how do you actually drive value for the customer? And that can be measured in terms of time saved, money made. There's a bunch of different metrics there you could use, but mm-hmm. it's definitely a level above just driving simple engagement.
Okay. Okay. Well, as tech continues to grow, then do you foresee any dramatic changes in how SaaS companies will have to approach product in order to be successful?
So I think the biggest thing that Wamply has done differently is we're trying to, by targeting the offline small business market, we're trying to get software and data to be sold together. And so whereas most software that you buy today, whether it's enterprise software or small business software, even consumer software, when you sign up for it, it's an empty shell and there's no information in there that is presented by the software company. It's usually the user's responsibility to start entering the software. That's true for pretty much every CRM solution out there. And so when you look at the small business community and the offline businesses that Wamply serves, that we're serving businesses such as food and beverage businesses, retailers, auto service, health and beauty. So brick and mortar business categories that have a physical presence and are serving consumers every day. These guys have no chance of collecting their own data, let alone entering it into a piece of software. They just don't have the time or the means to do so. And you know, what Wamply has realized is that we can actually solve that problem for them and that it's super valuable if we can do so. So as you mentioned in the introduction, we've partnered with lots of credit card processors and financial services companies, collected tons of data. And we really view it as it's part of Wamply's responsibility to not just give software to a business owner and say, hey, figure it out, get your data in there. And if you can do that, then maybe you'll get some value. But instead to go the extra mile and say, hey, we're giving you your data inside Wamply's software, and here are all the things you can do with it. And to the extent possible, we can automate as many actions as possible. And so I think really that philosophy of have great software, get unique data, and make sure that if Wamply is in a position to collect that data automatically and at scale, that we do that on behalf of the business instead of asking them to, and then figure out how do you make sure that with that great software and data, you have a really distinct distribution strategy. Those are the three pillars of really Wamply's business today. And so I think that's a common thread that most software companies, particularly if they want to serve small businesses, will need to adapt to that. And they'll need to start bringing unique data to the table rather than just software features.
Oh, yeah. And I think giving people that data is so intensely powerful. Okay, well, then I have one more question for you. It's just time for the wrap-up question. If you, Toby, had to pick one career-defining moment in your life so far, what would that moment be and why? What got you to where you are?
So I think, let's see, there have been a bunch, but I think probably the most profound one, which I think about really often, is when I was fundraising for Wamply in 2010 and early 2011, we had over 100 investors say, there's just no chance you're ever going to be successful. You're never going to be able to get this data, let alone sell into the small business market.
Yeah.
And so that was sort of a continuous series of no's that we heard as we were seeking to build this company. And I think it wasn't a single moment, but it was definitely something that's really stuck with me, which is becoming an expert in a space and really going deep gives you unique information and allows you to then you have contrarian points of view based on your experience. And I think that's certainly one of those things that's fueled me and fueled the company as people have told us, no, that's not possible. And then we've continued to prove them wrong. And now we're serving 150,000 businesses every day. So I think that's the main thing that jumps out to me.
What gave you the courage to do something that does sound impossible?
I think like a wombat, you've just got to be persistent.
That's so true.
Running a company is not the most fun job in the world. It's super challenging. And starting it from the ground up is it's a series of setbacks followed by a few wins. And that pattern just continues throughout the years. But I think you've got to have the fortitude. And at the end of the day, the best thing about Wamply is that we wake up every day and we're serving small businesses that are, they are genuinely underserved by technology companies. And they are also a really worthy customer base to be going after. Instead of building more and more features for the Fortune 1000 and helping them squeeze an extra penny of EPS for their public earnings reports, we're helping small businesses stay in business and thrive. And so I think that's, at the end of the day, that's the thing that's most exciting, which is huge market and a worthy market that we know we can help every day.
Yeah, I love it. Okay, one final thing then, if listeners have questions for you or if they want to learn more about Womply, what's the best way for them to connect?
So my email address is toby@womply.com. And if you want to learn more about Womply, you can certainly visit our website, which is just womply.com.
Okay. Can you tell me just one thing about the original Womply? The OG Womply, the wombat. I got to know.
Womply, the wombat. He was very difficult to see. Wombats have a tendency to burrow. Uh-huh. And so they're sort of like gophers in your backyard. You don't know whether he's there or whether he's watching you or what. Oh,
I was just having this image of him curled up at the foot of your bed. It was so cute.
Oh, not quite. Oh, that's a good image, though.
It was. Okay, Toby, thank you so much for being here today. It was really, really fun to hear your perspectives. I think you're doing something really, really amazing. Guys, that was Toby Scammell, fearless entrepreneur and founder of Womply, a company who helps you get more reviews, more repeat customers, better business insights, and so much more. If you know anyone who could benefit from the discussion in this podcast or others who may want to incorporate Womply services or a distribution-first product strategy, please share this episode. Subscribe to SaaS Academy for more episodes like this one, and please leave us a rating and review. It makes a huge difference for us. Thanks again for listening, and we'll catch you on the next show.
You've been listening to SaaS Academy. To ensure that you never miss an episode, subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast player or visit devsquad.com. That's devsquad.com. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.